There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 42. Continuing our ADP analysis, 300 through 400. We're getting towards the end, folks. Don't worry. It's almost over. We're getting there. It's getting a little bleaker as we go down the list. So we're larger groupings and more targets and more just kind of general talk on the situation. Plus lots of news as pitchers and catchers have reported, which we kind of hinted at last week. This was about to happen. So we'll get into that and much, much more. You can follow me on Twitter at BDentric, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. And my co-host is always on Twitter at Ryan BHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how we doing, my friend?
We're good, man. Matinee version today. So thanks for your flexibility. It's all my schedule. I've got a 5 a.m. flight Friday morning out of here to go to a bachelor party, which I'm way too old for.
That scares me thinking about
38
it.
Doing it. So we'll see when I come back. We got the labor stream next Tuesday night. We'll see, yeah. See how the brain cells are doing for that. But yeah, so away this weekend, I'll miss, I'm sure, tons of news. But old college buddy getting married. So we're going over to Colorado and having some fun. So
that'll be a good time. First time getting married this late in his life?
First time getting married. Yes, good, this is a first timer. So, yeah, he's a little delayed, but that's okay. We'll razz him for that.
Yep. Give him a good time. It'll be a fun weekend for you. I'll keep you posted on all the news and all the golf. Don't you worry. So we'll have fun in that regards, but let's talk news. And it's been a fun one. I guarantee I probably missed some stuff because it's kind of flowing in through beat writers and some's getting picked up and some isn't, but we'll start with the big one, or what some may think is the big one might not be big at all, is Jacob DeGrom going to have a slow start to spring because of a side injury. And I don't know if it's officially an oblique injury, but this side injury, they even said if it was regular season or games were on the line, he'd be pitching right now. So I am not too concerned about this. I'm not worried about it. As long as it's not elbow, shoulder, whatever, I'm cool. But what's your thoughts on Jacob DeGrom?
I mean, just the reminder of what you're getting into if you go with him. Like, I don't think this news item really moves the needle for me at all. I've got DeGrom at 120 innings, or no, 130 innings. I think I did this exercise a while back when we were talking our top 12 pitchers. And I don't know. I'm going to leave that projection there at about 130. For me, at 130, DeGrom is the eighth starting pitcher off the board. He would need to get to like 150, 160 to meet his ADP where he's going, the third pitcher off the board. And so I'm just not going to get him. Like, the other untold part of this is if you are rostering DeGrom, it's like you have to put up with this stuff every week. I don't want to put up with this stuff. Fantasy is supposed to be fun, stress-free. I don't want this.
Yeah, there's other headaches that are going to come along lines here that we can deal with. This is a kind of known one going into the situation. So, yeah, it doesn't really affect anything for me. But if you were on DeGrom, I wouldn't let that affect you either, is what I'm trying to get at. I'm not concerned yet. Where some people are like, the world was ending on Wednesday when that news came out. I'm like, this ain't it. This isn't the one to worry about yet. So I'd be cool there. In other news, something we kind of all saw coming a while ago, Frankie Montas, shoulder surgery likely done for the season already. He was already off my board, so I wasn't touching him with all the concerns. Now he's officially done. I guess the bigger question is it Domingo Herman? Is it Clark Schmidt? Who's it going to be? Like, I still think there's some hope someday not to start the year. Davey Garcia is still hanging around. There's options in New York, but I don't know. Who would you circle right now?
I would circle Clark Schmidt. I think the skills were there for him last year. He did do some starting in the minors. And so I think New York, like, it's easy to say, why didn't they sign, you know, Michael Walker or some other starter for insurance purposes? I think New York has their insurance in Clark Schmidt or maybe Herman, but Schmidt's the guy that I would take. The risk with someone like Clark Schmidt is the innings, right? And not even like total innings for the year. He's almost more of like a streamer, but you just hope he gets to five innings and can qualify and just kind of five and dive. Schmidt, I think, started like three games in the majors last season, went over four innings in a couple of them, didn't get to five, I don't think, in any of them. So that's your risk. But Clark Schmidt does have time to kind of build up through spring training. That's what spring training is for. So I don't know, man. I think Clark Schmidt, like, he's not a super sexy breakout or anything for me. I think he can be serviceable in the fifth spot for New York. And I don't know. The Montas news just kind of sucks. Like, I do. I mean, Yankees aside, like, it does suck when you trade some pieces and really go for it and it doesn't work out. Like, I love to see teams kind of, you know, go for it. And that's what the Yankees did last year. And it was a disaster. And that disaster is continuing into 2023.
Yeah. And if you're a Yankees fan for any reason, I'd still say if they're if they're in it at some point in time, expect them to trade for a starter. Like, they're not going to go down just with a random fifth starter all the time. So keep that in mind as well.
Yeah.
Fernando Tatis Jr., he's back. We saw him taking hacks. He said it, and then his manager in an interview said it as well. Shoulder feels great. He said last year on an off-speed pitch, he thought his shoulder was going to pop out every time he swung. He feels great right now in that regard. But the wrist is not 100%. And the way I look at this, Ryan, is if he's already hitting right now, that means he's not resting to let the wrist get to 100%. So I don't know if it'll ever be 100% this season. So if there's any glimmer of concern, that is a big one for me.
It is, and it's all connected. I mean, right? It's all connected. The swing is it's a kinetic chain. And even though, like, not to say I don't believe Fernando. I'd like to see what the swing looks like in spring. I'd like to see how he looks with the shoulder specifically. Matt Cederholm, who does a great job injury analysis at HQ, he actually put something out on the site earlier today saying he's still even more concerned about the shoulder than he is the wrist. Just because there's so much risk in like labrum surgery, it can affect so many different things that it's a clear fade for Matt at the early price. And so if it's a clear fade for Matt, given the injury risk, I'm still off of Tatis. And it's obviously not good news that the wrist is messed up, because is he going to overcompensate? And like you said, Bubba, he's playing through it. And I don't know how that's going to work out over a full, I guess not full 162, but full 142, something like that. So I'm still really worried about it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that one breaks out. I had Sammy Reed on for the San Diego Padres preview, and he's a diehard Padres fan, and he's probably not drafting Tatis either. So that's an interesting – he had a great take on it, so I recommend people check that out. It made me feel a little better about what we've said so many times on this show about our thoughts on Tatis as well. Felix Bautista, this one kind of came out of nowhere. Most of these will come out of nowhere, to be honest. But this one came out of nowhere on Thursday morning, that he is still having lingering issues from surgery. And I guess that was knee, I believe, is what I saw, but also a shoulder potential issue. Like, he had a couple different little lingering ailments going on. And he's not 100%, and he doesn't know if he'll be ready for opening day, which is concerning. So, you know, there's the Michael Givens chatter. You know, there's Tate out there that might be available at some point in time. This changes things a bit, Ryan.
It absolutely does, especially considering how hard Bautista throws. Like, there's a lot of stress on the shoulder and the knee. And so, yeah, this one did come out of nowhere, but like to what you were saying, Bubba, This is everyone gets excited for pitchers and catchers reporting, and then they report and say that they're hurt. Yeah. I've been hurt. And it's like, damn, that would have been useful information a few months ago. So we're getting a lot of that. Bautista. Yeah. I think it's a definite hit. I'd be looking at someone like, I mean, you mentioned Givens, who has the closer experience. I'd look at Brian Baker, to be honest, especially when we're talking ADP 300 to 400. In this episode, if you're in like a 12 team or those last few rounds, I take a shot on Brian Baker. The good thing with Baltimore is they have, and it was Lopez in the first half last year, and then it was Bautista. They've always kind of stuck with one guy. And so I think if it is an injury to Bautista, I think somebody will step in. It's Givens or Baker. And I would just speculate on Brian Baker. You look at the full season numbers last year for Brian Baker, not that impressive. 3.49 ERA, 1.23 WHIP with a 26% K rate, like decent. But if you dig a little deeper, Brian Baker, and I know you're going into like half season splits here with relievers, that's super small sample mode. But Brian Baker was a different pitcher in the second half last year. Fastball velocity is the big thing that I use to kind of validate if there's a change in skills. Did the fastball velocity uptick with Baker? It went from 95.2 to 97.4. So
that's big.
Fastball velocity, yeah, it was up two ticks from first half to second half, and everything else went up with that. K rate from 22 to 30%. Swinging strike from 10.6 to 12.2. Brian Baker looked like a closer-worthy reliever in the second half last year, even got a save. So like, I think he's close enough to leverage where if Bautista is out for quite a while, Baker's a fine dart throw. And again, if you're throwing darts this late in fab leagues, that's the kind of guy Baker that I would want to throw a dart on. It's very binary. He's either steps in and becomes the closer, you get, you know, you hit gold, or he doesn't and you cut him and you fab away all season. So
it's a great call because most people are pointing to Givens. So I like that as a dart later on. I think I've said it before that a lot of my early like fab leagues I'll start doing pretty soon, like my especially 12 teamers, like my last four or five picks are almost all spec closers. So then yep. I can drop them, right? Like take the chance now, see where it goes, drop them later type thing. And 12 team leagues, much more doable for sure. As a Giants fan, I follow a lot of the Giants beat writers. So I just want to throw these nuggets out there. We've kind of talked about it before. But even Farhan and Kapler have said it already that the front runner for third base is David Villar, which is something to definitely keep in mind. He's been discussed and he's late in many drafts. But the one I wanted to bring up, because we can talk VR if you want, but one I wanted to bring up and emphasize again is they've said it's a four-way catching battle. And I think it's more of a two-way catching battle, but it basically, and they've said it multiple times now. They said it at FanFest. They said it the first day at Pitchers and Catchers. They're either really putting pressure on Joey Bart or it's a real thing. One of the two. I think it's a real thing. So Bart's not a lock is what I'm first thing I'm going with. Roberto Perez apparently looks really good already. Like looks his older form where he was actually kind of serviceable in fantasy. And that's why they brought him in, because he's a good defensive catcher. Plus he used to have some pop back in the day, but there's a handful of other options deeper in the system that they're looking at a catcher. They have a prospect, Blake Sable, who has played outfield and catcher. He's strictly a catcher this spring. That's what they said. They made a point to emphasize he is strictly a catcher. So when teams emphasize stuff like that, it like at least should become on your radar is what I'm trying to say. Are any of these guys outside of Joey Bart as a starter fantasy viable? Maybe not, but more than anything, maybe don't fall in love with Joey Bart is what I'm trying to tell you.
Yeah, and that's where I'm curious on your take, man. Like, are they just trying, are they speaking to Joey Bart through the public? It's like, is this the wake-up call? Because Joey Bart has, you know, elite prospect pedigree. He's been told he's, you know, the next Buster Posey throughout his kind of rise through the organization, and it's all fallen apart in the majors. So I don't know. I think I'm still, like I said, you know more about the Giants than I do, and I think I'm more with, like, everyone else. I think Joey Bart will ultimately play. I think it's just way too early for San Francisco to cut bait or at least bench Bart like regularly. I mean, he's only got 400 major league plate appearances. I think this stuff takes time. So I'm going to opt to stay optimistic and say, this is just kind of a wake up call to get Bart going. I could be very wrong. Roberto Perez, you're right, is kind of a sneaky, I think, especially against like left-handed pitching and streamer weeks when you need catchers, that's a sneaky play. So maybe it is something like a platoon like that, but I don't know. I find it hard to believe they would cut bait on Bart this early, but I could be wrong.
I want to agree with you. I think this is a little bit of a wake up thing, but I think they're also making the point that, hey, the leash is very short. Like, yeah, get it together, kid. Like, this is like, we brought guys in for a reason. They were rumored to be in on the Christian Vasquez. They were rumored to be in on Gary Sanchez. Like, they were shopping around to bring in an offensive potential replacement for Joey Bart. So it is, I think, a wake-up call. It is his job, I believe, but the leash is very short. So the draft capital you're going to have to pay for Joey Bart, you better hope he figures it out, is what it comes down to. One other nugget I'll mention on the Giants real quick. Really don't have to talk about it at all. The other report that came out on Thursday that really made me kind of, moment is Joc Pederson is playing first base right now. They had him in like 3 weeks earlier taking reps at first base. Their goal is to play him between first base and the outfield, not just the outfield and DH this year. So could be even more playing time and flexibility for Joc. Just something to keep in mind. Don't know how far that'll go, but just something to keep in mind. He still has to get 10 games to become eligible. Who knows how long that would take, type thing.
Yeah, that is interesting. I did not know that. I really want, and maybe like you're wishing for this throughout his whole career, and it never happens for a reason. I do want to see JD Davis like play regularly, even in San Francisco. I don't know. At HQ, we've got JD Davis as the kind of having the biggest share of the pie at first base with half playing time with Wade Flores. We don't even have Joc Pederson at first yet, but that's interesting.
It just came down yesterday.
Aaron Judge was taking grounders at first base the other day too. So
So who knows what's going on.
I don't think that's
going
to happen, but
maybe it's for the shift. They can bring an outfielder around. Who knows? But something to monitor. Hopefully JD Davis gets playing time, because it is weird how they keep finding ways to seem like put him back to the bench. I don't get it either, but we'll see. Yeah. Alex Kirilloff news. Stop me if you've heard this before. He's reported to spring training. The medical experts on the team, the management of the team, Alex Kirilloff, they're all saying this is the best his wrist has been in a while. There's no limitations. He's ready to roll. Ryan, if he was ever like 100%, this guy is a beast, but he continually gets hurt with this wrist situation. It's hard to trust, but where are you at on this?
I mean, I'll believe it when I see it. I don't want to be like too, because like I'd love for Alex, because this dude had so much potential coming up as a prospect, and like his career has basically been totally derailed, and it sucks to see that. Let's see him get through spring training. Let's see him get through. I mean, it is, what is today? February 16th.
Yep.
Let's see how this looks in late March, early April. That said, like Alex Kirilloff, like 340 ADP outfielders going around him. So he's actually in our
discussion today.
Our range this week, but it's like Edward Olivares, it's Oswaldo Cabrera, it's Leody Taveras, like
there's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy, because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post, so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is the kind of guy, Kirilloff, you do take a shot on, because
he will gain first base too, because he's going to be their first baseman. So you get that first base outfield eligibility, which is pretty darn nice.
Yep. So, I mean, it's easy to be pessimistic, still want to see it, but at least he's starting healthy. In the past, we could not say that about Alex Kirilloff.
Back to San Diego, we did have a free agent signing this past week, not just all injury news and whatnot. Michael Wacha signs with the San Diego Padres, and I know there's always mixed thoughts on Wacha. The strikeout rate continues to drop, but he also continues to put up innings and decent ratios. He's going to a very good team. His ADP's past pick 400. He's even had some quotes coming out today that's like, it was pretty impressive. He's all in on the Padres, man. It's funny.
What did he say?
I'll look it up once you talk about him, but it was a good signing for the Padres, let's put it that way.
Yeah, good depth. I mean, we can, like they say, you can never have too much starting pitcher depth at any time. Here, I'm trying to look up on the fly here Waka's in-season pitch mix change because
they gave him a 4-year deal, by the way.
4 years.
Okay, here's what he said. Here's what he said. The league has been put on notice about what's brewing down in San Diego. That was his quote.
Okay. Interesting. Waka got like so much pub last season for having that lucky start. 269 ERA through his first 13 starts last year, and the skills were just not there. And I think that, I don't want to call it a narrative. I mean, it was true. Like, the dude was extremely lucky. Second half, you could say that luck corrected. Waka had a 4.11 ERA over his last 10 starts. However, quietly, the second half skills for Waka, and first half, second half, again, is a split for pitchers that I do look at because they can change quite a bit. And it does look like there was a pitch mix change with Waka. Second half, Michael Waka was skills-wise like twice as good as he was in the first half, despite having that 4.11 ERA. So I think we tend to maybe cast aside that. And again, the ceiling is not that high. This is Michael Waka. But he was sneakily a decent pitcher in the second half. And if you look at the pitch mix numbers, through his cutter, over 20% of the time in the last 3 months of the season. First half, cutter was down below 15%. So, again, you've heard this before, but skills change with a pitch mix change, either pitch mix or velocity, which I was talking about with Brian Baker. Waka's interesting. Yeah. Padres are going to win. Padres are going to throw him. Like, I don't know what Waka's ADP is right now, but it's
past 400. It's like four.
Yeah, it's
like
outside 404. The 400. Yep.
Yeah.
Right next to your boy, Brandon Crawford.
My boy, Brandon Crawford. Yep.
But that's a shot I would take. Not a high ceiling, not a true breakout type of thing. But like we saw last year, all you need is a few months of lucky stretch. And Waka, like I said, was better pitcher, better pitch mix in the second half. So I kind of like the signing. I don't know if we're putting the world on notice, but.
Yeah, that's why I laughed when I saw the quote. I'm like, Waka's rolling in just being like, yeah, let's go, boys. But it just made me laugh. But I'm with you. I rostered him a lot last year for like two start weeks and other things. Like, he was very serviceable throughout the season. So no denying.
Is he from San Diego? Is he? No, he's from Iowa. He's
a Midwestern boy. He's corn fed. So yeah, the surf is not his thing. So we'll see how that goes for him. Last but not least, I saw you added this, so I had to look it up. I didn't even realize that I missed it. Tim McCarver passed away at 81 years old, which for you and I, he was kind of the voice of the World Series for us for years. So that's a crazy one right there.
Yeah, no, just I did throw this on. I think it happened. I think the news broke an hour or two right before we started recording. And it is just that, man. I mean, we grew up, we're of that age where like I just remember, I specifically remember the 2001 World Series when he kind of called that Luis Gonzalez inside cutter against Rivera. And I don't know, Buck and McCarver, for as much at the end of their baseball tenures, caught flack on Twitter, and Twitter loves to just blast broadcasters. They were the voice like of our youth in World Series growing up. So yeah, rest in peace, Tim McCarver. We'll pour some out for you this weekend, but definitely a voice of your youth. That was well put.
Pour out some Budweiser for him as the St. Louis Cardinal that he was. Yeah. So give him some Bud heavies on that one. All right. On that note, we will transition to ADP's 300 to 400, which, we're not going to go over all of them. We're not going to have a position-by-position breakdown because it's wild. This is where you're kind of finalizing your roster, or you're looking at in DCs kind of getting depth at potential places. So we'll start with the hitting side of things here, Ryan. And obviously lots of warts as you get down here. There's no sugarcoating that. But you can find an occasional batting average guy, not a ton. Power is probably the most prolific thing here, if you want to call 15 plus home runs power, and then steals is kind of hit and miss too. So how do you see the hitting situation looking in this 300 to 400 range?
I think the big thing with this is, and this is where players are going to move quite a bit, and if you look at like preseason projections, and again we'll tweet this out from the pod account with the ATC projections that we're using, a lot of this stuff does not pop off the page because a lot of these guys at this point in the offseason, you're hedging playing time. So like these could be part-time guys where like, I'll take Edward Olivares for example. Like Edward Olivares over a full season should not be going in this 300 range. Edward Olivares, if he doesn't, like he has not been playing in recent years, if he doesn't play, he doesn't even touch this range in terms of a projection. A lot of these guys are kind of part-time playing timers right now, but that can change and will change quite a bit throughout spring training. So that's why it's super important just to keep on the news throughout spring training, because the playing time for a lot of these guys, where you say maybe 50% playing time right now in the outfield because Kansas City has five outfielders, well, someone's going to win a job and we need to adjust those playing times accordingly. So that's kind of the big thing that I notice, is like there are still skilled guys. You've got a power speed combo in Trent Grisham. You've got a power beast potentially in Adam Duvall, who ATC currently only has a 22 home runs. But to my point, you give Adam Duvall full playing time in Boston, like that's 30 home runs. So that's my big thing, is focus on the skills over the playing time at this point for this range. Because if you do factor in that playing time, a lot of times what I like to do, and Steamer 600 does this, that's the point of Steamer 600, is you can normalize playing time. So just take everyone and kind of bump them to 600 plate appearances and see what you get, see skills wise who pops. So that's a big takeaway for me in this range. The last thing that I'll mention, and then I'll stop blabbering, is league size.
Yeah.
So like in a 12 teamer, this is the 25th round. These are your last like five picks. Take your shots here in a 12 teamer. Take those, what I was just kind of saying earlier with Brian Baker, your binary guys where it either hits or it doesn't. If it doesn't, you drop and move on. 15 teamer, this is like your 20th round. These are still guys who you need. I mean, this is one third of your roster in a 30 team league, and in a draft and hold even more so. So it may seem very late. A lot of these guys, like you said, Bubba, may have warts, but that doesn't mean these guys are not going to play major impacts on your team in 15 teamers. So it league size is a little bit dependent on how much risk you want to take with some of these guys.
And it's a good point, because there's a handful of guys that you might feel safer about in this range potentially. And there's definitely some ceiling plays in this range based on your league format. Like some guys, you know, you got your Alex Kirilloff in this range who we just talked about. Do you take
your chance on him? Leody Taveras pops out for me too.
That's a great one. Leody Taveras, like I like Brandon Belt. He might be a safer player than the others. It's crazy to see how far Jared Walsh has fallen in a year, down to ADP 369. What if he bounces back to half the man he was before? That's still a potential value, all things considered. I don't know if he's going to. I think we're on the same page. He's probably not, but these are the kind of speculations, I guess.
We can all hope to bounce back to half the man we used to be.
Yeah, that'd be a long time ago for me.
Tyrone Taylor, another guy who pops here. And we'll talk about our targets here in just a little bit. We're just kind of mentioning on just player profiles. Tyrone Taylor, if he gets a full run in Milwaukee, like I love those skills, always have loved those skills. Whereas, like you said, Bubba, like a Brandon Belt is more probably not going to get 600 plate appearances on that team against lefties all the time, but is like in a 15 teamer. I mean, that's safe. It's very safe.
Yeah, very safe. Like another guy that stands out to me is Jose Siri, who some people are just big on because of the speed he can bring. And that's a playing time situation, looking at those stats as well. He could be an interesting one, hitting at the bottom of the Rays order. There's a bunch of them. Like, I'm not going to name them all off, obviously, but like your Juan Yepes, is give him the right playing time. That could be a monster play right there. So like Ryan said, is I love using Steamer 600, especially in like December. I was doing that a lot before we really had a base on ADPs and whatnot. And you can see these guys stand out in a much different light when you look at it. And a lot of the movement, like Ryan said, will come in this range. Like, I don't see Oswaldo Peraza, but he's ADP's 303. I see him moving up quite a bit once more hype comes out on him at the shortstop position. You're going to have a few in this range that will definitely some movers and shakers, to say the least. Let's talk pitching. And this is where it gets even, like, each week we're like, okay, your whip's going to get a little more hurt, or you're getting less ERA help. You can still find a little strikeouts. You maybe get some more save specs, as you mentioned, with your Bakers of the world. A lot of upside type plays as you go down here. There is, like, you know, the Wainwrights of the world and stuff that are kind of your staples, you know what you're going to get type situations. But how do you foresee this range of pitching?
There's a lot of guys I like, and we'll talk. It was actually quite easy for me to put together a good list of targets here. So some of them, like, for example, Braxton Garrett is someone you're kind of hedging, doesn't have a job right now. That's why he's going this late. Whereas, like, I thought Wainwright was a great example of, yeah, just kind of that boring, but you do need him in your deeper leagues. It's funny. I just right between those two guys. And then maybe this is a news item we missed, is Eduardo Rodriguez.
I think he's MIA. Yeah, again, like there's no, like the team has not heard from Eduardo Rodriguez again.
Because I think he was supposed to, I think he's like on the WBC.
Yeah, and you have to report by a certain date to go be eligible for the WBC, and he's MIA.
Yeah, it's not good.
Not good.
A lot of save specs. You've got to roll this Chapman. You've got Jason Adam. Taylor Rogers, Brandon Hughes, Trevor May. You've got, I guess, Rafael Montero is not a save spec. Jimmy Herget, you've got going later on. I do want to, and I pretty much always do in my last five rounds, take, and Bubba, you were saying this too, but take one or two closer specs. If they don't work out, bail. If you believe that Chapman can ascend in Kansas City, I think that's a fine one from a baseball standpoint. Brandon Hughes, I think, is fine too. And
yeah, what do you think about Hughes, though, with Fulmer getting signed?
Yeah, it's tricky. I don't know if Fulmer, like, becomes the closer. It's just another body. They've got, I think, Boxberger's
there too.
Merriweather as well. Yep. So
don't forget Rowan Wick's still there. He, like, led the team in saves. Like, they have a lot of options.
Turn up the Wick. Yep. There's a lot of options, so maybe they do a committee. Maybe they don't. I don't know. But in a 12-teamer, it doesn't cost you. I would not go for, like, a Brandon Hughes in a 15-teamer. I think the price is still too high. I think you need to still round out. I'd rather round out the end of my rotation with some of the starters that are going here as opposed to that. But in a 12, I think this is where you can kind of take some of those shots.
Sometimes such a bad news person. There's another piece I missed looking at this list. AJ Puck got dealt to Miami for JJ Bleday.
Yeah.
That's it. I think that happened like the day after our last episode. So I totally, like, zoned it out. But he shows up here at ADP 397. And it's interesting because I've always wanted Puck to be a reliever. And this might be the chance for him to get in there after Floro gets traded. I think it's a great spot for him. So I don't know if you want to spec on like a fab league, but I think he's even almost better for me now in a DC format personally. And then JJ Bleday, he should play almost every day in Oakland. Like, they have no reason not to give him run. I'm not saying it's a great option, but it's Oakland. So, like, here we go.
Yeah. I love that trade. I just love any, and I guess both top 10 picks, I think back both the from day, the SEC. Yeah. Yeah, they both go to Florida.
I think so. Yeah.
I know Puck did. Okay. So then they both did. Cause I know Bleday did. Puck's a great spec. In Miami, I can't imagine Miami would use Puck as a starter. I thought it was risky for Oakland, but for Oakland it made sense just because what do you have to lose, Oakland? Yeah. Whereas, like, with Miami, you're maybe booting Trevor Rogers or Braxton Garrett out of the rotation if you're trying to take a shot at Puck. And Miami's bullpen is not that great. He needs to beat out Dylan Floro. So, like, AJ Puck has quickly entered the chat as a pretty nice save spec at this point.
Yep, 100% agree on that one. Other than that, like, you know, Andrew Painter's in here, Brandon Pfaadt is here.
I was just gonna, yep.
You got these potential, like, rookies that you don't even know when they're gonna be there. Dre Jameson, even I'll throw in the mix because he's a guy we saw a little bit of last year, but he doesn't even have a spot in the rotation. Brian Bayo, who we'll talk about, he's technically you could group him there if you wanted to. He should be in the rotation, though, I'd say. So you got some of those guys, but then you got, you know, Quintana, Wainwright. I even put Steven Matz in here. Kenta Maeda coming back from surgery. Like, it's a really, really, like, the more I look at it, I'm with you. This is a group of pitchers I wouldn't mind taking some chances on later in drafts. Or again, I think we keep saying this, get a couple pitchers early, and then we like some of these depth pieces as you go down the ADPs here.
And I think, and not to sound like a broken record, but like your Painter, your Brandon Pfaadt, like that in a 12 teamer, I'm all over those guys. If they start in the minors out of camp, cut and move on. There is someone here, a trivia question for you, man. Led Major League Baseball in home runs and walks last year, starting pitcher.
Home runs
going in this range.
Walks.
Two categories you do not want to lead the league.
Oh, it's Josiah Gray.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, no, the second one, I knew that one right out the gate. And the crazy thing is, though, is he's also like one of the best strikeout guys. He's the projected for the most strikeouts in this range. He's got such good stuff. He just leaves that fastball on a tee.
157 Ks projected by ATC.
Also the highest ERA at 4.82.
4.82 ERA. That's beautiful, man. And probably I don't have wins on here, but
I'm not looking to take a chance on him, but if he's a dude, he's going to get to pitch every fifth day in Washington. He's going to get his chances. If he can just tweak anything, there's hope there. But, yeah, I haven't seen the hope in a long time. Another safe spec guy, because I'm just mentioning guys we're not going to talk about in targets. Ronaldo Lopez is here, and he's a fun one. I think he's a very good one out because everyone's thinking Graveman, and maybe Graveman starts out with it, but Lopez would be perfect for that gig. So he's another guy that kind of falls into this realm of safe specs at ADP 380 that I like quite a bit.
Yep, agreed.
All right, anything else on the pitching side, or we want to talk targets?
Yeah, I don't think we're doing fades this week because it's weird to fade 300. No.
And I'm looking at your targets on our list here, and I probably would have taken most of those if you would have taken my guys. So this is going to be a fun one. We kind of agree on a lot of what's going down here. So who is your first target in this 300 to 400 range?
This was, this was easy to put together in terms of targets. We're going to do five targets each. Bloomboard's legend. This year's Nathan Eovaldi.
Is that a good thing?
It is, man. Because Eovaldi 2 years ago was legit. I don't know. Yeah. Bloomboard's legend Aaron Civale is my top target of this group. Aaron Civale is a Bloomboard's legend because of two things: the second half to first half improvement in strikeout minus walk, which I firmly believe in, and the fact that he did that with a pitch mix change. So, again, those are two things in tandem that I'm very interested in. Aaron Civale, over his last 10 starts in the second half after he came back from the IL, was really good. And I really trust Cleveland's ability to develop their starting pitchers. The track record is elite. Aaron Civale, the cutter, the curveball, the curveball is a devastating pitch. 20% swinging strike, 60% ground ball rate. Went to that cutter curveball combo much more often in the second half. The control is elite, and the strikeouts ticked up because of that and the whiff. So for that reason, I've got Aaron Civale. I mean, we're not totally out of the woods here. Like, Aaron Civale has the worst combination of sinker and four seamer in baseball. Like, the fastball is really, really bad. And so that's what's dragging him down. And I guess the track record. But if he leans into that cutter curve mix, which those two can play off each other particularly well, really against both sides, he can throw that cutter in on lefties and the curveball away from righties. Like, I don't know. I think it's all in place for Aaron Civale. I've gobbled him up on a bunch of teams. He's my top target in this range on the pitcher side.
I like him a lot. I usually get sucked into him every draft season, and it obviously has not panned out as we'd hope in the past, but the improvements you mentioned in the second half was huge, like big, big stuff that at this ADP especially, I'll take my chances there. He's usually higher than this in previous seasons as well, so I'm all aboard that train too. For me, I'm going to start out with Isak Paredes of the Tampa Bay Rays. Couple reasons: first base, second base, third base eligibility, which is always quite nice. And then you throw in the mix of the power that he brings to the table. 20 home runs last year, hit .205. Throughout his career, a much better batting average. Guy had a .195 BABIP. That's not going to happen again. Usually he's in the .280+ department. And even the projections like ATC, 17 home runs, .238. That's still kind of playing him down 116 games. He should play more than that if he's hitting for power. They're going to keep him in the lineup. He's one of the few power guys they have. Increased his barrel rate to 6.4% last year. His hard hit to 37.6, which are massive jumps from his previous stints in Detroit. I just like Paredes quite a bit. I got Jason Klett got me really going on him, breaking down stuff on him. And the fact that Tampa Bay is going to try to keep him out there as much as possible, that's always a concern. So he's either going to play first, he could play third if Yandy struggles, he can play all over the place, he could play DH. Like, they're going to make a point to have him in the lineup, because one thing the Rays struggle with is having consistent power, and Paredes is that guy. So Isak Paredes at this point in the draft, with that flexibility and that power upside, and again, I think even the projections at .238 on the batting average might be a bit low on what this guy actually can do. I'll take my chances on him, especially for a guy who walks 11.5%, 17.6% K rate. He's going to be 24, still coming into his prime years potentially. I like Esau quite a bit.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up the Collette seal of approval from a playing time standpoint. That's always my worry with the Rays. But like you said, Paredes, he just plays everywhere, first, second, third eligible. And with that, he kind of can just move around, play five times a week. And that's what you want in this range. So I like it, man. And you did back that up by taking Esau in our
draft. I have a lot of shares.
So putting your money where your mouth is with that.
Who's your next one?
All right. Catcher. So this is where it gets ugly, man. I mean, this is where, like, I don't know, maybe you are a streaming catcher at this point, but you want at least someone with a pulse to start out. And I think Christian Bethencourt absolutely has a pulse, a very fast pulse from a fantasy standpoint. I pulled the barrel and max exit velocity numbers from this ADP group out before the show, and Bethencourt pops third highest barrel rate of anyone in this tier last season, 11.7%, and a max exit of 113, which I use a lot, especially on small samples. And Bethencourt had 333 plate appearances last season. I don't know if he's the everyday catcher, or I shouldn't say it. No one's really an everyday catcher, the primary catcher. There's Francisco Mejia there. We'll see how that works out, but Bethencourt can play all over. 37 games last season at first, 10 games at DH, even played a game at third, which I would kind of want to see how that played out. But I think there's enough playing time and enough power with Bethencourt that he's worth going after as a second catcher, and hit 252 last year with like a decent K rate. So like the skills are there, man. So
I like Bethencourt a lot. I took him in RDC as well.
You did.
One of the things I would like to mention to what you were saying also, you mentioned the first base catcher, like the games he played. Most of those first base games were in Oakland. He almost was primarily a catcher with Tampa Bay. So that's a big plus going forward as well. And that stood out to me in a big way to kind of justify his probably locked in role at, say, 110 to 120 games, which at this point in the draft is pretty darn awesome. So, yeah, I like that.
I wonder if the third base game, if that was Oakland or
I'd have to look at BREF would have that for us. But, I'm guessing Oakland. Just a hunch. My next guy is Brandon Belt. This is a combination of just a guy I've loved forever, a guy I've wanted to see leave San Francisco forever with Triples Alley. A guy that, health is always an issue. I'm not going to sugarcoat that. Like, this is one of those where if second week of spring his knee breaks, you wouldn't be surprised. That's just what Belt does. He's also had some fluky injuries. He's got hit in the hand a couple times and broke his hamate bones and stuff. But when healthy, he's still one of the best OBP first basemen in baseball. He's got ridiculous power. I still think he's got 25 to 30 home run upside. He said he was going to sign with a place that he get to play pretty much every day. And Toronto pretty much said he's the everyday first baseman, at least versus right-handed pitching. So he's on the strong side of a platoon in a very loaded lineup in a ballpark that moved in the fences in right center field. The height of his hits do not concern me at all. Like, he's not a line driver like Vladdy. So the height of the fence does not concern me with Belt. So at this point in the draft, if you want a 25 to 30 plus home run bat that I would say would hit you around 250-ish, give or take, I think there's a ton of upside there with Brandon Belt. So I'm a big fan of him and what he can bring to the table. There is the injury concerns. I'm not going to sugarcoat that. But if healthy, and hopefully the fact he'll be DHing will help him stay healthy, I like that quite a bit with Belt.
Belt's interesting because I thought the ADP would rise quite a bit with the move to Toronto. It hasn't really. Like in the last, I just pulled the last five, or sorry, the last, sorry, the last three draft champions on NFBC, and Belt is going 369. So I don't know. You're getting them at a pretty good cost.
Yep. I'll take the chances.
All right.
Sell me on this one.
All right, man, you're not a believer already.
No, I'm not a believer. I'm just curious on what I'm missing because I feel like it's almost Luis Arias light.
Okay. So my pick is Michael Massey. I think from a playing time standpoint, he absolutely had, like, the Adibota Mondesi trade completely, I think, opened the door for Massey to play pretty much every day. 3-for-3 in stolen base attempts in the majors last year. I know 3 steals, but he did run and he was perfect on the base pass. I think there's some stolen base, not upside. I mean, that's part of his profile. So I like the speed combo. The power in the majors last year was pretty good. I mean, 173 at bats, but Massey had a barrel rate of 13%, max EV of 108. So Massey's not like a, I mean, I don't think he's a power hitter, but do I think he's got like 20-20 upside over a full season in Kansas City? I do. And like I said, I think he's going to play pretty much every day and have the chance to realize that upside. I'm trying to pull up what he had stolen base wise in the minors last year with Kansas City. Massey was 13-for-15 in AAA, 12-for-14 in 2021. So again, not like an elite speed guy, not a great power source, but I think he'll give you a little bit of everything at second base. And again, I think he'll play every day. So that's my case.
And Casey likes to run. They like to run.
They do.
So you got full season in there, might really boost him up there. So I don't hate it. I was just kind of like, I needed to be sold. You sold me more than I've been sold by anybody else. So I'll say that much.
And again, these guys are going late for a reason. Like Massey, there are some plate discipline concerns with my guy here. 14% swinging strike last year, chase rate of like 39%, a 5% walk rate. Like he's not the most patient hitter. You know, the K rate's okay. But I think that's probably his biggest kind of downfall is plate discipline. I could see him in an extent once the book comes out on Massey a little bit in 2023, kind of later on the season. I think that's the downside risk. I think pitchers could eat him up if they find those holes in his swing. So
we'll see how that goes. My next guy is Brandon Bayo. I've talked about him enough on every show that I can. I'm not gonna belabor this anymore, but it's just one of those things we talked about, you know, prospect pedigree, which apparently is a word people hate. I just found that out. That's an interesting one to me. But, you know, it came in first start or two, not pretty. Went back to the minors, worked on a few things. When he came back August 24th, he made 8 starts. He had a 3.12 ERA, 3.53 xFIP. His 22% K rate still had almost a 9% walk rate. That is not ideal, but it was better than it was in his first run. Up in the bigs and in the minors, he's always shown pretty good overall stuff with strikeouts and ratios. He's been working with Pedro. I'm going to keep saying that. I don't care.
I was waiting for that one to cut the changeup.
Hey, dude, you give that kid a changeup, and I am in. Like, so I'm going to take at this point. We're talking upside picks. Like, I'm going to take an upside pick in this set of the area. If you know if he struggles, I'd rather let's put it this way. I'd rather take an upside pick on Brandon Bayo than MIA Eduardo Rodriguez, who I used to be in love with. So let's like take our chances here. And then, you know, we talked about Brandon Pfaadt. We talked about Andrew Painter, both awesome guys. We've seen Bayo at least pitch in the bigs and and he might have a spot in the rotation already. So if you have to pick your poisons there, I would lean that direction. He might not be the best out of the three, but that'll be my argument there. I'll keep it short and sweet. I'm a big Brandon Bayo fan. I know most people know that by now. And I'm trying to get him everywhere I can.
I just remember last year he was like the next best thing when he got called up. And I remember why I watched his debut and it was bad. The command was not there. It was real bad. Everyone watched that. And I think that kind of is burned into everyone's brain that's who Brian Bayo is. And it says a lot to get sent down, come back, make some tweaks, and look a lot better the second time around. So I can dig it. I can dig it. I don't know if I'm going to be taking them much just because I like some of the other starters that I'll list here a little bit more, but I can see it. There's not many guys that consistently do a 55% ground ball rate. That's pretty rare. So,
yep, for sure. Who's your next one?
I'll go to the mound. Just continue that comparison. I'll go Alex Wood. Your boy, there's some shoulder issues. Like you have a lot of boys. So I keep saying your boy, but all basically Giants, any guys. Giant or former Giant is.
Yeah, I like Wood, but I like Alex Wood. Don't cut and paste that one, please. I like Alex Wood, but I am nervous. I'm going to say that much.
Giants, former Giants, and anyone named Will or Willie would qualify as
Big Willie
as your boy. No, I mean, it's just I'm banking on Wood, despite the shoulder problems. He has started 26 games each of the last two seasons. Incredibly unlucky last year with that 5.10 ERA. HQ has him at a 3.40 expected ERA. It's just a nice blend of missed bats, ground balls, strikeout to walk of 18% each of the last two seasons. Like, get, you know, ride him while you can. If he gets hurt, you can move on. But pitching for the Giants, that, you know, has a very good track record of starting pitching prowess. So for all those reasons, I think Alex Wood's an excellent buy outside the top 300, almost going 400. So you just got to keep that shoulder attached.
Yeah, it's definitely an upside type play. Excuse me. So I don't blame you on that one bit. For me, my next one's going to be Cal Quantrill, another guy I've talked about a million times. Not a ton of strikeouts. They've improved a bit later in the season as the pitch mix has changed some, but what he does is he eats a ton of innings, and he gets you elite ratios, which are very hard to find this late in the draft, which also racks up a ton of wins. So just certain categories you don't find this late. So if you already got a bunch of strikeouts early on, or you took a couple chances before and you might want some more ratio support, I think Cal Quantrill is a great spot. I've mentioned it a ton of times, so I'm not going to beat this dead horse either, but he's another guy I just love to kind of round out my rotation where I'm not feeling like taking a Mitch Keller and the upside that he might bring someday, somewhere. I'll take a guy like Cal Quantrill.
Are you, so I went Savali early on. Are you opposed to Savali? Are you kind of like them both? Are we doing a board bet on who does better?
I like them both, and it's the lazy answer. It'd be team construct. If I need more strikeouts, I go Savali in a heartbeat. Yep. But if I feel like I already got a couple big time strikeout guys, and you know, a few other things are penciling out, I'd go Quantrill.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Okay, I like these next two you got here. This is fun.
I kind of cheated and threw two for my last target, but it's a same general theme. And we've talked about it a little bit, but that general theme of six starters, these guys are going to get a shot. Two really good six starters going in this range in David Peterson, the Mets, who was on the outside looking in of that rotation, and Braxton Garrett of Miami, who I don't know for sure is on the outside looking in Miami. We'll see. I don't know why they signed Johnny Cueto, but that was brutal.
It's a team builder.
Yes, team builder. He can team build from the dugout. He didn't need a team build from the rotation. These are the guys you speculate on skills, not roll. All they need is an injury to one out of five starting pitchers, which is going to happen. It's a matter of when, not if. I think they're both really good, Garrett and Peterson. Peterson, the only issue with him is the walk rate. There is some issue with that, but in the baseball forecaster, Peterson, we put an upside of a 3.50 ERA, 160 strikeouts. Like the missed bats are there, the strikeouts are there, the ground balls, 49% ground ball. Like all the pieces are there for David Peterson to do his thing. And I've professed my love for Braxton Garrett in previous pods, so I won't rehash that. But I think Garrett, when he gets his shot, is going to be really good in Miami.
Yeah, no, I like both those a lot, Peterson and Garrett, but big targets of mine later in drafts for everything you mentioned, especially DCs, because I can just wait for them to get their spot, because they will, both of them will probably get at least 15 starts this year. I wouldn't be shocked, like throughout injuries and everything else. So big time moves, because it's one of those, if you don't draft them and then they do get their chance, the waiver wire, you're going to be paying a lot of money for them. So it's going to be, because they're worth it in a heartbeat.
Exactly.
My last guy, and there could be many, like you said, there's a lot of actually intriguing, especially pitching options in this range for different speculation reasons. I'm going to go with Jose Suarez, looking for the upside in this one. Looked really strong last year, back-to-back years of sub-4 ERAs, which I like to see. Had a 3.96 ERA, 3.86 xFIP last year. Strikeout rate improved as well to 22.3%. Walk rate dropped to 7.1%, which is still high, but going from 8.7 to 7.1 is a nice little bump in that regard. And he, you know, gave up a little more home runs than you liked last year, but all in all, a guy that we've seen really, really strong stuff for. He'll be 25 years old. You know, talking to Prepus, Daniel Prepus on my show, there's a lot of excitement about this kid. I say kid, he's gonna be 25. That he could take that jump. Like, everyone likes Patrick Sandoval. This kid's supposedly supposed to be better than Patrick Sandoval. Like, this is the guy that could be their, you know, guy behind Shohei type pitcher at some point in that rotation. And if you can get him now to take that bump, I'm not gay. I'm not, don't take this the wrong way. The way that Christian Javier got the hype he's got now, Suarez could get a bump like that. Not maybe all the way to the top 50 picks, but you know what I mean? Like that big jump in the next season. Maybe he's a top 150 guy next year. And that's huge coming from an ADP of a 351, a 200 pick jump. So Suarez is one of those guys I think has a massive upside to him. Again, if just imagine him dropping the walks a little bit more, striking out a few more. Like that's all it's going to take, and he could pull that one off. The caveat I'll mention, early reports from Nevin and company is they're going to do like a 5.5-man rotation in Anaheim. They're going to make a point to get their best pitchers like Shohei and who else did he mention? I just had roster resources.
Sandoval.
Might be Sandoval. I think it was Tyler Anderson. Going to try to get those two every fifth day starts by using Sandoval, Suarez, Detmers, and maybe another one, Davidson or someone else, as like giving them extra days rest because they're younger. That way they can prolong them. Because that's the thing with Suarez. He had like 109 innings, 103 innings last year. So if they can get him like 140, but still have him the whole season, that could be a plus as well. So that's a detriment, though. No two start weeks. That's a bummer. But at the same time, it could be good for him. So who knows? I just think the talent's very, very good.
Assuming that even holds.
It all takes is one injury for that to go completely out the window.
Just two things I'll mention on Suarez. You did mention, Bubba, the walk rate. Did cut his walk rate in half in the second half. Jose Suarez had 10% walk rate in the first half, down to 5%. In the second half, the reason I know this off the top is I wrote up Jose Suarez in my Pitch Exchange article for HQ a couple weeks ago. Ditched his curveball, which was a really bad pitch for Jose Suarez. Ditched that pretty much all the way. Threw it like 10% of the time in 2022 and replaced that with a new slider, kind of a harder slider that was much more effective. And Suarez, you've got now a pretty sweet three-pitch mix of a four-seamer that has a double-digit swinging strike, which is what you absolutely want to see. You want to see a good fastball. Changeup's great, 18% swinging strike. Slider, league average, 16% swinging strike. But having a league average third pitch is a lot better than having a really bad third pitch, which is what his curveball was. So for all those kind of reasons, and he seems like Suarez seemed to learn how to rein that in the second half with the walk rate. I like it a lot. So.
Yep. 100%, 100%. We got a couple of listener questions here, and then we'll head on out on this Thursday matinee edition of Bubba and the Bloom. Our buddy MS at SMMS79 asks, first off, for fun, what's your favorite club in your golf bag, Ryan?
My personal Billy Barule, my 56-degree wedge. There is no club outside of your putter, I guess. I don't really count that as a club. There's no club more important than a wedge off the green. If you can chip to within 3 feet consistently, get that gimme, you are going to save over around probably 5 or 6 strokes. Easy. And so that 56, I know that thing. I could wake up and hit that. I know exactly what it's going to do. I will never, maybe I shouldn't say never. It will be very hard to get that club out of my head.
Yep, one in Arizona now with that comment.
I love that thing, man. It is. It's like one of my kids. The 56.
Yeah, no. The wedge is a good one. I'm gonna go. I call it my 150 club, but as I've played more golf, it's turned into like anywhere between 150 and 190. But the fact is, I know that club where I can kind of control it. Where other clubs, I can't. It's a hybrid. It's a I think it's a 4 hybrid. But it's a joke between friends because we're at one of my favorite golf courses, and I always my token thing, and you'll appreciate this as a lefty. I walk around every clubhouse and I go, oh, they discriminate here. There's no left-handed clubs. Like there's never left-handed clubs in the clubhouse for sale. Well, this one was on the clearance rack for $45, and the guy says, no demo swings. I'll give it to you as is for like 35 or something. Like, okay, sounds good. Like he just want to get rid of it because no one's buying lefty clubs. Like, what do I have to lose? $35, brand new TaylorMade hybrid. Cool. And I've had that thing in my bag. I've had it regripped twice. The head's like chipped, got paint chipped on it. I've had it forever. And it's just one of those. That's my old trusty. I call it the 150. We have a 3-club tournament at our course here. It's always that club, my wedge, and like a 7-iron or something. That's how I just go to town with that thing. So
I like it. I don't even regrip. I'm scared to even regrip my 56.
I was nervous, but it got to the point like there was threads of string coming out. It's just like
at that point, that can get time. That's time.
It was time, and it was uncomfortable at first because you had that feel for that club. Mm-hmm. It was weird. His baseball question, though, is, as the news slowly trickles in about injuries from the offseason, what buzzwords do you look for in the updates to gauge your interest? For instance, the Felix Bautista update, two injuries, worries me more than the DeGrom update on the surface. So, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know about, I don't know of, a specific buzzword. One word that that doesn't worry me as much is just delayed or behind.
Yeah.
And this goes back to that Luis Castillo, Zach Wheeler example from last year where they were just behind but not actively hurt. So I'd say that's one kind of word that doesn't worry me as much.
Yeah, 100% with you on that one. And it's just kind of all take everything with a grain of salt until we get something more secure. Let's see guys actually play.
Yep, especially, I mean, to kind of go full circle, that Tatis news, he could say his shoulder's great.
Yeah. Tatis, Kirilloff, those guys. Let's see them go out and do some stuff. Yep. Then Gerald Points says, two-part question, Sale or Jomo this season only? I'm going Jomo.
I'm going Jomo, but we're Jomo people. Totally get the it's the safety versus the super high ceiling of Chris Sale, who only threw six innings last year in the majors, which is why I'm not picking Sale. But I understand why you would take Sale, but Jomo I think is just rock solid and full season in St. Louis that's gonna work.
I will say this much: I don't worry about the six innings thing. He's like Verlander to me. If he's healthy, he's throwing as many innings as that arm will pump out. But that's a big if for Chris
Sale. Sale?
Sale, yeah. So the six innings doesn't bother me with him. He's in the Verlander class where he's at that age, he's going no matter what, as long as he can.
Yep.
And then I think this is Francisco Alvarez, Meade, and Vargas this season in 2024 only. So it's kind of a speculative thing. I'm not the best prospect guy. I'd lean Vargas if he's the everyday guy in LA, but that's a tough. I know Meade's a very popular name out there these days.
Yeah, Meade I know is a kind of sexy 500 plus ADP. Miguel Vargas is your pick. Yeah. I think the question is this year and next year only.
Yep.
You want to go with the guy who is going to play the most in the majors. It sounds like LA is very confident in Miguel Vargas, who was, by a lot of outlets, a top 10, top 15 hitting prospect coming into the majors. So that combination of pedigree and playing time, it's gotta be Vargas. I know probably I don't know if Vargas is, I think Alvarez is probably the highest ranked prospect. Yeah,
probably the highest ranked, but I don't even know how much he's going to play. There's a lot of things in his way.
So Miguel Vargas is my guy there.
Yep. With you on that one. And on that note, let me make sure we didn't get any last-minute questions in here, and we will head on out as we have one more week of no more questions. One more week of ADP analysis to do. We have a Labor live stream on Tuesday. Yes. What else you got going on?
So, Labor is Tuesday night, 5 o'clock our time, 8 Eastern. I'll set up a YouTube link. We usually host it from the HQ YouTube page, but we'll get that out beforehand so that you can have that link. It's going to be fun. That draft is honestly, it's one of my favorite nights of draft season because it's the first kind of real big industry draft. And I don't know, it's a great group, and it's the first live 1 minute pick. Your feet are held to the fire, so it's a lot of fun. I've live streamed it solo, and we were just talking, you were asking me how long does this go. I think last year I went 3.5 hours by myself, so I could definitely use your help with that one. So that one's gonna be a lot of fun. I just hope for no snowstorms in Colorado so I can make it back on time to, more importantly, my wife and kids, but then for Labor as well. Yeah. I'm supposed to fly back Sunday.
He'll be good. He'll be good to go. There's no snowstorms coming yet. You're good. Everything will be fine. Doesn't snow in Colorado. No worries there. But hope you guys have a great weekend. Tiger Woods is playing golf right now as we speak, which is always a glorious moment in life. And we'll be back with you guys next week. Check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. I'm on Twitter at BDentric. This was Bubba the Bloom, episode 42. Catch you guys next time. Thank you.
Better with a home policy from American Family Insurance, because you'll feel protected no matter how the wind blows. Also, you can keep enjoying the home of your dreams. And our expert agents can help you save up to 23% when you bundle home with auto. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit amfam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.